Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Sunday evening. Joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, the TD Garden before the Knicks-Celtics game is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys. Fun one you had today. Hoping to get as fun of one here tonight.
Joining me from the room next door, I am in the ESPN green room, which we had for the great Hubie Brown and Dave Pasch and Cassidy Hubberth. But now they're long gone. And next door to me here in Dallas, Texas, at the American Airlines Center is Ben McMahon.
Yeah, I can hear you through these thin little walls. Is that a little bit weird? Howdy, partner. Sorry for my manners. How we doing, man? Long time no see.
Great. Yeah, I know. I had a night on the town with McMahon last night, Bontemps. It was
shout out Nick and Sam's.
I have to shout out Nick and Sam's. It was spectacular. What else can I say?
Looks spectacular, except for the picture that was taken with the horrendous lighting in it.
The waiter was really good, except for as a photographer. and I will say this, they beefed up their security. They found out they had a big celebrity, Brian Wendy Windhorst, coming in. It was incident-free. Food was delicious. The price was right. It was a good time.
There you go. It's great.
And what an afternoon we had here today. A genuine high-level regular season basketball game. Noon start. The weather in Dallas today was spectacular. People were having brunch, coming here for a noon game. They get five probable future Hall of Famers in the starting lineup, four of which are sort of in their prime superstars. Luka, Kyrie, KD, and Devin Booker combined for 137 points.
That's pretty good.
Game came down to the final 15 seconds. Durant on a broken play hit this brilliant shot. And then Luka, McMahon, I guess he was defended by Josh Okogie, but
he just missed.
He just blew a layup.
Josh, by the time Luka was letting that shot go, Josh Okogie was in the third row.
He missed
Devin
a bunny.
Booker believes he was in the third row because he pushed off. Devin Booker expressed as much, according to Booker. Luka felt like Booker was taunting him. Luka, who's still working on his English, said, "Shut the flip up." And then they get all face to face or smile, but it was one of those smiles like,
well, Luka has a smile that's, it's not exactly warm.
It was fun. And Booker said it is, when you guys are in there talking to Booker after the game, he says, you guys say you don't want everything to be all friendly. We got some smoke. And Luka said, it's a competitive game. It's all good. Next time, just don't wait until there's 3 seconds left to talk. Those guys, this goes back to, last year. And, I think it was after game five in Phoenix, whenever the Suns went up 3-2, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
Luka walked off the floor in Phoenix saying, everybody acts tough when they're up. And then, came back. The Mavs won the series. Luka.
What game was it? Yeah. What game was it?
Oh, that's game seven when it was Luka Doncic 30, Suns 27 at halftime. Both teams have made major splashes, which, speaking of friendliness, I didn't sense a whole lot of that between KD and Kyrie Irving. Matter of fact, I'm not sure if those guys even recognize each other. They sure didn't chat. But anyways, major splashes with those former Brooklyn buddies going their separate ways, KD to Phoenix, Kyrie to Dallas. And look, man, this was a unbelievably entertaining basketball game with a little brouhaha at the end. This is good for business. This is fun.
So this is what I thought was interesting. So obviously we got emotions running hot between Luka and Booker. Maybe not warm, maybe not hot, but running warm.
I would say hot. That goes back
to double technicals. Hot enough for Luka to get technical 14 after the game had been decided.
That's
away from a one game suspension.
It's a good old-fashioned real rivalry at this point. It was very fun.
And then while they were reviewing the altercation, then they got chest-to-chest again at the other end of the court and had to be separated again. So we got emotions running hot on one end. And then the emotion with KD and Kyrie was nil.
They didn't acknowledge each other.
I asked KD after the game about it, and he goes, there was no emotion. And he kind of gave like a diplomatic answer. He's like, yeah, you know, we'll talk about it later. It's not a time to talk. Well, I don't know what it was. And there was one point, I don't know if the TV showed it, but it was in commercial break, so it wasn't live. And KD walked down towards the Dallas bench and they walked past each other, literally 6 inches from each other, didn't even look at each other, didn't even turn their heads, walked right past each other. KD went down and chatted, said something to Jason Kidd, said something else, somebody else on the Dallas bench, nothing. Mm-hmm. Post game, Markieff Morris comes over, KD's teammate with the Nets this year, just this year. I'm trying to think. Markieff has been around. I don't know if he's been a teammate of his before. I don't think so. He was a teammate of his for a few months. Bear hug right before KD, you know, KD delays the postgame interview to give Markieff a bear hug. Doesn't even look in Kyrie's direction. Zero, nothing. And they can say that, you know, I think Kyrie said yesterday, didn't he?
A couple of days ago after the last game, brothers, you know, he'll be my brother for life. Looking forward to the friendly competition. I saw some competition. I didn't see any friendliness.
Well, I think, you know, Cassidy on the broadcast said that Kevin, you know, told her or said that he was disappointed with the fact that Kyrie left before the season ended, that they didn't get a chance to see this thing out. And certainly seems like there's some emotion there. I mean, the bottom line is, for me, as somebody who wasn't in the building and was watching that game on TV with our man, the machine, here in Boston this afternoon, I'd like to see Dallas and Phoenix play in a seven game series. I think Phoenix would probably win fairly comfortably, but it'd be some pretty fun emotion and a lot of energy in that series on a lot of fronts.
Just to be clear, this game could have easily gone either way. This was not a referendum.
No.
I will say this, though. Like, one thing that was clear, I've been to two games on this road trip, two of the three Durant games on this road trip. It's pretty clear to me that the opposition is going to camp on Booker and Durant even on Ayton. And so what the Suns did today, basically, the Mavericks, their defensive strategy, they shrunk the floor. They collapsed on the lane to keep Ayton from getting going. In fact, Ayton was a little bit frustrated. He still had 16 rebounds. And they basically said, whoever is playing four for the Suns and Chris Paul, we're not going to guard. They just didn't guard Chris Paul.
There was three, if you want to call KD the four. But yeah, the fifth guy out there, Josh Okogie, for a long time in this game, he had more shot attempts than KD, which is a massive win for the Mavericks. He ends up 3 of 13 from the floor, 0 of 8 from three-point range. And those eight threes are like, here's your invitation. We are humbly requesting that you take that wide open three-pointer in the corner. Sir,
listen, over the final, so Kevin hit a three with 3:04 left to put Phoenix ahead by a point. The next few possessions were an Ish Wainwright three, an Ish Wainwright two, a Chris Paul three, a Chris Paul two.
Wasn't an Ish Wainwright two. Then, he had four threes.
He had missed a, no, I'm saying they were, these are shots. They were all missed shots.
I apologize.
My point is, in the final 3 minutes, there was a two-minute period where neither one of Devin or Kevin shot the ball.
Yeah, which is Booker finally took. Yeah, which
that's what they were trying to do.
Wainwright goes 4-5 from three-point range. That's was a massive swing in this game because, again, Okogie couldn't hit anything. And then Chris Paul, I thought he might be CP3 PPG, but he had a big fourth quarter. Dude had 8 points in the fourth quarter. And, you know, look, it sounds crazy because he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but teams are going to be okay with Chris Paul getting wide open threes if it means they're getting the ball out of Booker's hands and Durant's hands.
Yeah, that was like my big takeaway, is if this was a seven game series and it was 1-0, we would be talking on TV and writing about this is going to be a Chris Paul decided series, because, you know, like, so in this game, Booker and Durant scored 73 and Irving and Luka scored 64. Luka was being bothered a little bit by a thigh injury. Mm-hmm. It was offset by the fact that Tim Hardaway hit 5 of 6 threes in the first half. So on a normal game, that easily could flop. It easily could be Doncic and Kyrie that have 70, and Durant and KD, Durant and Booker who have 60, and then maybe it's a Koji who hits a few more. But I'm telling you, Chris Paul is going to be getting straight wide open shots for the rest of this season until he proves that he can do it. And he has not this year. He's having one of the worst shooting seasons of his career. So yeah. that was one takeaway that I had from this game and this seeing these three games so far with Durant is that they are disrespecting Chris Paul, not like straight, yeah. like we don't think we can play anymore, but they're just like, look, we got to pick yeah. who we're dealing with. And we're looking at the percentages and the percentages say Chris Paul isn't getting it done like he used to, and they're going to let him open.
And I thought they actually did a really good job defending Kevin Durant. Durant had 17 field goal attempts in 40 minutes. That's a phenomenal job. He still scored 37 points and hit the game winner. He still scored 37 points on 17 shots and hit the game winner. Obviously he gets to the line 11 times. That helps. But guess what? Like, he's going to get to the line because you have no chance unless you're physical with him. But, dude, we've seen this now for 15 years or whatever, but somebody that tall and long who's that good off the dribble and then just can get to a spot, slam on the brakes, go straight up, perfectly bounce, and shoot over anybody in the world. Like, unless you're getting the ball out of his hands, basically you just have to hope he misses.
On the game-winning play, the Mavericks, who we've maligned for their defense, and rightly so, the Mavericks' defense killed the play. They were going to run a side pick and roll. They killed the play, totally broke into pieces. Durant took the ball and went and found something. When others, when he broke off the play, they still forced him to go like in a semicircle around, like a right-handed player driving left. I mean, Jason Kidd had to say, like, we'll take it. And
the one thing they wished that they could have executed was throwing the body at him again when he got the ball back, right? Yeah. The second time he was able to go one-on-one there at the end against Hardaway, and Hardaway played him as well as he can, but Tim Hardaway is never going to be able to stop Kevin Durant.
He's given up 6 or 7 inches there.
Yeah. Just never going to happen. And by the way, there's a very short list of players who might be able to stop KD from getting a shot off one-on-one.
So they're now 2-5 with Luka and KD playing together. Four of the losses have come down to the final 20 seconds.
All five. And look, this was not about, there have been cases, I think of the Timberwolves game, especially where they're passing the ball back and forth to each other and they turn it over. The Lakers game where, the most important possession of that game, they're down 3 with 18 seconds left, and Luka has a total brain fart, and they turn it over because he doesn't realize he can go back court to get the inbounds pass. This was not about a lack of clutch execution by the Mavericks. They got Luka in a situation where he's going one-on-one. He muscles up. Booker would say pushes off, whatever. Luka got a little 3-foot wide-open shot that he's going to make 98 times out of 100.
What is the percentage on that? It's high. It's high.
Yeah, he said one of his buddies, I assume a non-basketball playing buddy, texted him after the game and said, I could have even made that. I mean, and if he makes that, then who knows? You know what? Because there would have been 3.5 seconds left, and guess what? Either Durant or Booker might have made a shot to win it there.
I don't think they had a timeout, though. I don't think they had a timeout.
But again, this came down to KD made a great shot and Luka created a great look and missed a bunny. That's for all the other stuff that happened. That's what it came down to.
Yeah. So this was a big, long homestand. What did they do on this homestand?
Ain't over yet, baby. We got those Jazz coming in. I hope Lauri Markkanen's lower back soreness is feel a little bit better by that point. I know the Jazz are really trying to finish strong here. I tell you what, they got the Sixers in here. Philly was on a back-to-back, but still they beat the Sixers, and thank goodness for them because it's been a rough go. They spanked the Spurs, which is, I believe, was the result that both teams are very, satisfied with. And other than that, it's been a tough homestand. And again, these look here. It's very simple. you're going to have to score 130 or so to beat the Mavericks. Guess what? The Mavericks, and our old buddy Bob Vulgaris tweeted something along these lines. The Mavericks are going to have to score 130 to win. They had 126 today. They lose 130.
Well, Bontemps, that's the thing about a playoff series. Like, I think any series with the Mavericks is going to go a long way. It's going to kind of be seesaw like that. But by the way, like, the Mavericks are sliding here. You know, I want to take a look at those standings, Bontemps.
Yeah, I mean, now you've got Dallas Minnesota.
Dallas is outside the six.
Well, not only is Dallas outside the six, but the Clippers are outside the six. You've right now got Dallas and the Clippers matched up in the first play-in game. And you've got Minnesota, who we talked about a week ago, having a horrible loss to Golden State where they collapsed and lost that game. They're now up into sixth because they've had a good couple days. And that's really what
they won three in a row.
Yeah, that's what the next few weeks in the Western Conference are going to be like. There's five weeks to go in the season from now until the end of the year. And it's going to be week to week. Things are going to shift. And day to day, things are going to shift pretty wildly when you have all these teams, right, all bunched together like this. You know, right now with the Lakers and Warriors, they got a two-point game with 2 minutes to go. Like, the winner of that game, it's a big swing across the board. And, you know, to go back to this game, the thing that stood out to both, this game really, to me, highlighted the way I think things are going to go in the playoffs for both these teams. For Dallas, you guys talked about it a bunch. Their defense is a huge problem. I thought it was good. Josh Green's back in the starting lineup. Would have obviously helped if Maxi Kleba played today.
Also would have helped if Josh Green would have scored a point.
Well, that would have helped. But you saw Reggie Bullock in particular against both Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. He just wasn't good enough to stop either of those guys. And Josh Green's at least big enough and physical enough to go toe-to-toe with those guys to some degree. He's their best option they have. He's certainly better than Justin Holiday.
I'll say this. I thought Reggie Bullock played some really good defense, and sometimes really good defense ain't good enough.
No, for sure.
I agree. I can't say Reggie Bullock played a bad game. And he gets some shots.
I wasn't saying he played a bad game either. But, like, if he's your secondary guy and you have Josh Green out there, I think that at least gives him a chance, where I don't think Justin Holiday gives him much of a chance. And then on the other end,
they'd love to have Dorian Finney-Smith. They had to give him up to get Kyrie, just like the Phoenix Suns, and this is even more so. They'd love to have Mikal Bridges to be the guy who's, okay, you want to dare him to take all those wide-open threes?
Right.
Good luck. Well, you're not giving Kevin Durant without giving that guy up.
Well, and that's the thing about watching the Suns, right? You mentioned Durant's going to get to the foul line. Durant doesn't really get to the foul line like that very often. He averages around 7 a game. Obviously, he got 11 today, a couple late on that intentional foul. But this Phoenix team came into this game 27th in the league in free throw attempts per game. They are not going to shoot a ton of free throws. They have to win with pretty insane jump shooting. Their starting five today was 17 for 25 on jump shots. That's the tied for the most of any five-man lineup in the league this season in a game. Through their game so far, Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are shooting a combined 61% on jump shots. Now, look, they obviously are incredible shooters, right? I'm not saying, like, it's not, like, out of the world that they're doing that, but they're going to have to do that every game in the playoffs for 2+ months for them to win, because their defense isn't very good, and they're not getting a lot of easy points. So
define easy, because Kevin Durant shooting mid-range shots.
It's a shot that I always think is going in because he's one of the great offensive players in the history of the game. But, like, it's going to be on those guys to create shots a lot. Because, like you guys said, Chris Paul is not the same player. And teams are going to load up on those two guys, and it's going to be a lot of Josh Okogie, who is 0-for-8 from three. It's going to be a lot of Ish Wainwright. It's going to be a lot of Torrey Craig. It's going to be a lot of campaign. Like, it's going to be a lot of these other guys having a hit shot.
I wonder if there needs to be more Damian Lee, but then you're giving it up on the other end for him.
One thing I'll say about the Suns is they're bigger than they were before because they brought in a 7-footer. And so they got all – in this particular game, they got all the big rebounds. They had two putbacks, one by Booker, one by Ayton in the last couple minutes. And then at the end, Durant got the rebound to secure the game after Luka missed it. They got all the big rebounds. Ayton had 16 boards. And that's a thing for, you know, the thing I'd say about the Mavericks, all five of these losses come down to the last seconds. It means the margin's pretty thin. It means that they're not, you know, it means that they're not like an eon away. I just don't know where they're going to come up with the difference. And I don't know, you know, how long it's going to take them to do that. So
when their defense is just wrong. Also, Ayton's got to get more than six shots. I mean,
yeah.
Well, that's what happened.
Shots to more than two free throws.
But that's what happened in this game. The Mavericks, when they ran a pick and roll for Ayton, they closed off the middle. They completely shrank the floor. Whoever was guarding Chris Paul would completely come off him to go over to Booker or Durant. Like literally, would run away from him.
Yep.
And then whoever was guarding I call the four because I feel like Durant plays the three, but if it's Torrey Craig, if it's Josh Okogie, if it's
the corner guy,
Wainwright, if it's Terrence Ross, whoever was on that guy, he just didn't even care about it. He ran in to try to defend on Ayton's pick and roll. And so like, that's the game. I talked to the Suns players about it afterwards. I talked to Monty. I talked to Booker. I talked to Durant. I didn't get to talk to Chris Paul. He was, got out of here in a hurry, but, you know, that's going to be the game plan. And so, you know, we'll see. All right.
Look, the Mavs exposed the Suns' flaws in glaring fashion and still gave up 130 points. And, you know, it wasn't good enough to win.
Well, here's the thing. Not in the second half, to be clear. But there are times now that I've watched this.
Big shots.
Now that I've watched the Suns play a little bit here, there are times where they make two passes and generate a great shot, like in 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like in the first quarter and a half of this game, I'm not sure that the shot clock got below 10 more than a couple of times when the Suns had the ball, because it was like pass, wide open shot, pass, dribble, wide open shot, like swing. And there was one point where Chris Paul brought the ball up the court, both Booker and Durant touched it, and it resulted in an Ayton dunk. And the Mavs called timeout, and Durant was walking back over to the Suns bench, and he was screaming, "That's basketball. That's basketball." Which, you know, it sounds pretty basic, but the concept is they just move it and you can't move it fast enough. That isn't the way it was at the end of the game, but you know, there's going to be games where they take care of business in the first half. So, all right.
I also think in general, when you look at it, like to me, obviously the way Dallas guarded them, it nearly got them a win. Sort of to me, I still think if you're going to beat the Suns, the best way to do it is to single cover Devin and Booker and Durant for most of the game. And make them shoot 70 times, because if you're giving these other guys on the Suns all sorts of just practice threes, like over time, I'm not sure how that'll work out, but I just would not let any of those guys get open looks, because I just don't think any of those guys can create anything. And I don't think as good as those two guys are, I don't think they're going to score 120 points by themselves every game.
So your game plan is the two guys who scored 73 today, despite seeing a steady diet of double teams, just single cover them and try your luck with that. An efficient 73, by the way.
I just think over time, if you're giving up all of these wide open shots and those guys are making shots, look, some teams don't have the manpower to do that, right? But like, for example, they're right now lined up to play Golden State. Now, Golden State's going to lose today. We'll see where they wind up. But, like, if they play Golden State in a series and they could throw Clay on Booker and they could throw Wiggins on Durant, not that those guys are going to stop those guys, but say, all right, you guys, like, try to score 90 a game between the two of you every game. And we're not going to give up 20 points on threes, or not 20, 30 points on threes to these other six or seven players. We're just not going to do that. We're not going to let DeAndre Ayton get easy buckets, right? Like, it'll be interesting to see how teams guard them, because I do think you can make an argument that's a more effective strategy long term than giving up a ton of wide open shots to these other guys.
It's as old as time. That's a strategy as old as time. Do you let the guy go get off, or do you let you make the other guys beat you? That's strategy as old as time. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. So the Lakers are going to win this game. I don't know what the final is going to be because it's a six-point game with 20 seconds left. AD has 39 points.
Very good today.
Jared Vanderbilt. I didn't get to see any of this game. You were watching a little bit of it, Bontemps. Vanderbilt with another impactful game, especially rebounding the ball. I have to assume defensively too, because the Warriors only shot 40%, but I don't know.
They got up 33-15 in the first quarter. And even after a really cold stretch, the Lakers, they led, I think, the entire game. I'm not sure if the Warriors ever got ahead. Warriors pushed back, but Lakers played really well. And this is a big win. I mean, every win they can get, especially with Steph back, making his debut, he looked fine moving around. It's a big win for the Lakers. I mean, everyone they could get without LeBron, obviously we talked about it the other day, and especially with Steph playing, you would have probably marked this down, even though it's a Warriors road game, as a loss. That's a big, big win for the Lakers.
I keep making the case that, you know, like you do, Bontemps, that the Warriors will eventually, get it going, because they're going to, you know, get their guys back healthy. But the road thing is, it's hard to
look past. And also, there's really no indication of when they're going to have Andrew Wiggins back. And that's a vital piece. Like, they need him back on the court and playing well. And it's, you know, there's just really not been an indication of when that's going to happen. Now, Draymond has a hand injury. There's, you know, they got some problems. And yet they're fifth in the West.
Yeah, the only teams in the league that have fewer road wins are the Spurs and Rockets, and San Antonio's in Houston tonight, so maybe that changes by the time people hear.
Well, another game tonight is Grizzlies Clippers. Talk about a misery index situation. I don't know what's going to happen in that game. I do know that the Clippers have lost five in a row since they put Westbrook in the starting lineup. It's not 100% his fault, but it has completely ruined the team's mojo.
It is not a coincidence. Let's put it that way.
It's a contributing factor.
It certainly is.
And then we have the Grizzlies, who had one of the worst days in recent memory on Saturday. Ja Morant sent home for the road trip. Brandon Clark diagnosed with torn Achilles, although it was pretty clear that was the case on Friday night. And Dylan Brooks suspended for this game tonight in LA against the Clippers because of 16 technicals. And by the way, if he gets more technicals, he's going to get more suspensions.
Every two now.
I don't have the complete record in front of me. Do you remember a guy getting suspended for this the first week of March? Like, this is awfully...
Well, I saw he got suspended, I saw he got suspended, and I was initially like, "What did he get suspended for?" Like, he can't have that many technicals. Then I looked it up. I was like, "Holy cow, he doesn't."
Draymond's next one is a suspension. Luka's only got two more to go. They didn't have this back when Rashid was getting like 41 technical fouls, so in a season. So
not a lot of guys getting near 20 though. Like, usually it's maybe a guy misses a game. You don't usually hear about it happening, like you said, Brian, three quarters of the way through the season.
Okay, so look, here's the thing. A lot of people have said a lot of stuff about Ja. I don't know what's going on. I don't hang out with Ja, quite obviously. I've always had this thing, though, where I never know because I am not the player's keeper. I never know when a player goes out and does stuff. You know that there are certain players have reputations as big partiers, which Ja has that reputation. I don't think that's in any question. But like if a guy has a 40-point triple-double, I don't know if he was out to the club 5 a.m. the night before. Like sometimes you see like, you know, something is on TMZ, the guy is out, and then the next game he goes 2 for 15 and he gets ripped. But you don't know. TMZ's not there in every city. What about maybe in a non-TM? What about maybe in Oklahoma City he was out? And then he comes back and has 37. I'm not necessarily just job at any player.
I do have some nightlife sources in Oklahoma City. And well, anyways, let's just keep it moving.
Yeah, I'm RIP.
Well, look, this is there's no point in us piling on Ja Morant. Obviously, there
Let me just say, my point is if a player plays well, he may be hurting his career and hurting longevity of his career by his off-court situation. But if he plays well, generally he can do whatever he wants. And that has been what's happened with Ja Morant. He has played well, so he can do whatever he wants. But he has crossed the Rubicon.
Mm-hmm.
He has crossed the Rubicon. And now we are in unknown territory.
Yes.
Because I don't know whether this is something that Ja has to deal with, whether this is something the Grizzlies have to deal with, whether this is something the NBA has to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
because this is not about partying. This is about repeated instances of there being, you know, potential threats of violence, you know, playing with guns, you know, accusations of playing with guns that have been denied. And, you know, and again, this wasn't a case where somebody with the cell phone caught Ja out at the club at, you know, 3-something a.m. He put it on his own Instagram, like, defiantly. And I honestly think because the partying and the lifestyle had been a concern, right? I think Ja, if you look at his statement, you can take that as him acknowledging that, right? I think this ultimately could be a very good thing for the Grizzlies organization because they had a problem and they, you know, they didn't want to acknowledge it, but it was well known. Ja's lifestyle was at least concerning, and the lifestyle of the people around him was concerning. And the Grizzlies kind of were in a situation where their choices were continue enabling or potentially alienate. And now, these are issues that have to be dealt with. And so the Grizzlies, as they're trying to help Ja, it doesn't have to come across as, hey, we're trying to control you. We're, you know, it's, listen, we all share concerns for you. We are coming to you out of concern. And hopefully Ja follows through on his statement and, you know, whatever form of getting help is, he follows through on that. And I would say this, John needs to look in the mirror and just say, am I acting in my own best interest? That has to be what guides him. And every single person around him needs to do the same thing. And if the answer is, if they're not acting in their best interest, they shouldn't be around him. He might have to make some difficult decisions. And just speaking really frankly about this, E. Morant, Ja's dad, needs to look himself in the mirror. And I think he needs to be really honest and say, is it more important for me to be a celebrity or more important to be a supportive father? Because both might not be, I think trying to do both is problematic. I'll say that.
I would just say that people should watch what Jalen Rose had to say on Countdown yesterday. So that was very well said. I've said a bunch of times, I think Ja's the most electrifying player in the NBA. I've thought that basically since the day he got in the league. He's an incredible player to watch. He's a fun guy to be around. I've enjoyed interviewing him over the years. Always had good interactions with him. I just hope that he's able to get to a place where, you know, like he said, he needs to work on his well-being, work on ways to handle stress. I just hope he is able to get to a good place because he's super fun. The Grizzlies are super fun. And, you know, I would like us to be talking about Ja, the basketball player, and get back to talking about that. And I just hope that he's able to, you know, get some help and get to a place where he's feeling good. That's really my only thoughts on this whole thing.
When the situation happened with the Pacers game, where the NBA did the investigation, where there was accusations made and the NBA, you know, banned one of Ja's friends from going to any NBA arena for a year. As part of that investigation, you know that the NBA asked a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And you know that it had to be concerning. And in this case, you know, in the situations, the other stuff that's happened that Ja's been involved with in Memphis, you know, I don't know. But in this case, it was within NBA confines. And so the NBA, you know, really looked into that. So I am reminded of an interview that Carmelo Anthony gave on a podcast. And I don't remember the name of the podcast. I believe it was about 2 or 3 years ago. And Melo was talking about the meeting that he had with David Stern when he got suspended, I think, for 15 games back in 2006. And Melo was talking about when David Stern called him in to discuss with him his suspension. And Melo was, to that day, very upset because, you know, if you remember, it was at the Garden. He was with the Nuggets at the time. It spilled into the stands. A number of people got suspended, but he got suspended more than anybody, 15 games, which is, you know, a huge, heavy suspension. Adam Silver probably suspended him for, you know, a quarter now.
I think Adam Silver's done a phenomenal job, big-time CEO potential, but keep it moving.
Savvy. He talked about what Stern said to him, and which Stern basically said, you got to make a choice. Mm-hmm. Are you going to be a part of our thing here, or are you going to be not? And I'm boiling it down because he had much harsher language.
Right.
And he basically said, we know what you're doing. We know who you're with.
Mm-hmm.
We know the choices that you're making. And you're either going to go one way or you're going to go the other. And I doubt the NBA's surveillance has, you know, recessed in the last 20 years. And considering that they also just did this investigation, I'm sure they know a lot about what's going on. Maybe they don't exactly know what happened in Denver the other night. I assume that was in Denver. That's where the team was. I don't 100% know where Ja was. But David Stern basically said to Carmelo, you got a choice here. You can either be with us and be wildly successful and be a big part of what we're doing or not. And I wonder if there's somebody who can have that discussion with Ja. I don't know who that person is.
Yeah.
I don't know if Adam Silver has that discussion. Maybe he does. I'm not the player's keeper. I don't know if that discussion, but Carmelo described it as a seminal moment in his career.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have a seminal moment here. But more importantly, the Grizzlies have an incredible team. Ja is an absolute treasure for a small market like Memphis.
Yeah.
Ja is a treasure. That could be a once in 40 year player. You know, I always talk about when the Bucks got to the finals in 2021 and won it. It was the first time they'd been to the finals since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar asked for a trade in, what was it, 73, 74, whatever that was?
First time in 50 years they'd been in the finals when they happened to have Oscar Robertson and Kareem on the team.
Right. It had been 50 years since they had, basically they waited 50 years between MVPs, okay? Memphis could wait 50 years between a player like this, okay? So what he means to the Grizzlies, it is unquantifiable what he means. And then there's what he means to the NBA. He is an incredibly valuable player to the NBA. And by the way, is being paid as such. He's headed for a $200 million contract. He just
lost the signature shoe deal with Nike.
Nike has just debuted his signature shoe. Oh my God. You see the guys, the day this came out, Powerade announced he was a brand ambassador. There are billion-dollar companies saying, this is our guy. This is going to be the face of our operation. His value is enormous. And so this is extremely, extremely important. And for the Grizzlies, this is a really amazing team that they've got. It's like they've done a really good job putting it together. They've drafted well. They've developed well. He has been electric. He is carrying an entire franchise. That franchise is thriving in that market because of Ja. Okay. And they have really good people there. I feel really good about the way the Grizzlies handle their business. They have a terrific business operations staff. They have a terrific game operations staff. They have terrific team media, like some of the best team media in the league. They have a wonderful broadcast. They do a lot of things right, but it ain't happening without Ja. You know, he is what's driving it all. And so like, this is really important. And it's something that has got a lot of skin in this game. And then bringing it back to what we talk about here, which is the NBA, it has an effect on who's going to win the freaking title this year. Cause this team has a chance to do it. And now we are in a tough spot. So I don't know if there's anything else to be said. We don't really know what's going to happen, but we know that we're in a crucial moment.
So. Yeah. And again, I just hope that Ja, with the help of the Grizzlies and you know, whoever else they seek, looks at this as an opportunity and you know, not as like some sort of I got to deal with this type of a situation. And he's going to have to, I think Ja's going to have to make some very difficult decisions and do some very difficult things to ultimately fulfill his potential, which is, you know, to be one of the great players that we've seen play this game for a long time. But you know, the way that he's been going, it felt like he was going to be a star that fizzled quickly. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Well, I'd still bet on him, but I also don't have all the information. So anyway, the Lakers ended up winning that game by 8. I just wanted to update Anthony Davis finished with 39 and 8. Six players for the Lakers are in double figures. Austin Reeves, 16 points. He's starting to put up some numbers, Austin Reeves.
We're not talking about Austin Reeves. Not until they at least get in the play in.
Well, there.
I know that might be the next podcast, but.
So Utah is now with Lauri Markkanen. We don't know his situation. They don't have him. They're going to be struggling. There's no return for Zion in sight for the Pelicans. Those are the two teams directly in front of the Lakers. And the Lakers are one game in the loss column behind the Clippers.
Well, listen, the Warriors are in fifth with 31 losses. The Wolves and Mavericks are in sixth and seventh with 32 losses. The Clippers, Jazz, and Pelicans are 8th to 10th with 33 losses, and the Lakers, Thunder, and Blazers are 11th to 13th with 34 losses. That is the spread from 5th to 13th, 3 losses with 5 weeks to go in the season. So this is going to shift on a day-by-day basis between now and then. I think we all agree, assuming injuries don't mess things up for Phoenix, they're going to be in the top 4. Sacramento with a 5-game lead on Golden State, they seem – barring complete catastrophe, they're going to be in the top 4. Mike Brown will be coach of the year. Memphis and Denver will probably be second and first in that order. And then let's see what happens. Well, that's true. Maybe Memphis slides back a little bit. We'll see what happens there. Bottom line is they're going to be in the top 4. But then we'll see.
The home court advantage in the first round, like, we know the teams are going to have home court in the first
round. We know those teams. You know, unless, again, Phoenix gets decimated by injuries. So then
let me just
5 to 13th is an absolute crapshoot.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Let me just say this about Phoenix. They are two games behind the Kings, and they play the Kings twice more. In fact, they host them next weekend. They also, I believe, play the Thunder twice more, who the Thunder are backsliding, and Shea has been out. I don't know whether he'll be back for Wednesday's game. They do have some tough games. They've got the Bucks coming in, but that's at home. They've got the 76ers coming in, but that's at home. They have the Nuggets coming in, but that's at home. They don't really have
the teams behind them also all stink. So as long as they are able to stay healthy, they're going to rack up enough wins to be all right.
I'm talking about them moving up. No offense to the Kings.
The teams all stink.
I mean, they win a game and lose a game.
The Warriors have guys with four championship rings, including the
No, listen, I
bombs have just like they
hold
stink.
Hold on. I think the Warriors are if the Warriors are healthy, as I've said, they're my pick to get out of the West. But right now,
you can't say that and say they stink. It's got to be one or the other.
Well, I'm talking about right now. Right now, which of these teams from five on is good right now? The Clippers have lost every game with Russ. The Mavs are 2-5 with Luka and Kyrie. The Warriors, every time they play on the road, they lose. Like you said, the only teams with less road wins are Dallas and Houston and San Antonio. Minnesota, who we've been clowning on for months, is somehow sixth.
Dang.
The Pelicans were second. They've fallen off a cliff. The Jazz and Thunder have their best players are hurt. Who knows when they're going to play? LeBron isn't playing for the Lakers. There's none of those teams you feel good about on a nightly basis. That's all my point is. The Suns, maybe the Suns can move up. I think it's, regardless, though, it's like you said, the top four seeds in the West, you know who they're going to be now. Let's see.
Here's what I'm saying about the Suns. They have today ended a four-game road trip. That's all their road trips. They have a couple of single-game trips that they have to make. That's it. There's no more long road trips for them. And they're barely leaving the time zone. And they have games against the teams ahead of them. And they look like they're going to win a lot of games. They look like they're pretty good. They're 3-0 with Durant and Booker. And they're obviously not
They're five. My point is they're five back of Memphis. They're five back of Memphis with 17 to go. They're probably not getting there.
Well, here's the reason I'm saying that is because if I'm the Suns, the last thing I want is the Warriors in the first round. And
If you get to third, you might get the Warriors anyway. And B, if you don't get the Warriors, it might be the Clippers. It might be Dallas.
If the Suns are concentrated, like Monty Williams played 11 guys today. He doesn't know who he's putting on the court. Quarter to quarter.
Like Ish Wainwright today, I believe, didn't they?
Okay. Yeah. Ish Wainwright finished the game today. Ish did not play. He played 2 minutes Friday in Chicago. We played no minutes in the first half.
Well, here's the real thing. You know who's really rooting for Phoenix to get to third? Denver. That's who's rooting for Phoenix to get to third.
Well, think about that.
Because if you're Denver and you're staring down the possibility of playing either Phoenix or Golden State in the second round, that wouldn't feel very good.
Well, this is my point. This is my point about what's going to happen for the Suns. Yeah, I don't know if the Warriors are going to be in fifth, but Steph just came back.
Right.
And I wouldn't bet against it that they're not going to slide. And so you'd be looking at Warriors first round, Denver in the second round. I don't want that. I'd rather take my chances with who's ever in sixth because it ain't going to be a perfect team. And then Memphis. I would much rather prefer that than going into Denver, who's like 28-4 at home. So I'm just saying the Suns are in position to, you know, have a potential move here. As we talk about, sure. You know, they're starting to distance themselves because the team that they got going here. So, all right, Bontemps, you got to cover a game. McMahon and I got to write our stories.
No Jalen Brunson tonight for the Knicks, so we'll see if they can get a ninth straight win without him.
That's going to be a tough one there. That's going to be a tough one there, especially since the
Celtics had a rough week. Nearly blew a game on Wednesday against Cleveland. Obviously blew a terrible game on Friday against the Nets. We're up 28, lost by double digits.
By the way,
lost to the Knicks on Monday at the Garden.
Joe Mazzulla said that's a one-off. That's how he explained that comeback against the Nets, that comeback loss. Which is fair to say because it was the biggest comeback of the year in the NBA. Bontemps, do you believe that was a one-off? Not blowing a 20 lead, but you know, just the way they're playing.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Celtics are fine. I think the Celtics are in a lot of ways like the Suns in that they don't get a ton of free throws. They don't put a ton of pressure on the rim. They're very reliant on jump shooting across the board. When they were a dominant team over the first couple of months of the season, they had the greatest offense we've ever seen. All their support players are shooting 45% or better from three. Grant Williams, Derek White, Al Horford, et cetera, right? On Friday night, when they lose to the Nets, Jason Tatum went 0-for-8 from three. They couldn't hit a shot from three. They also were messing around from basically the start of the game. I mean, it was an ugly game from the jump, and it felt like a pickup game. And the Nets, you know, when they started to get it in gear, the Celtics just never really snapped out of that frame of mind the whole time, which they all admitted after the game. So I think the Celtics are going to be fine. That being said, when you look towards the playoffs, in particular, this looming matchup with Milwaukee, as we know, even though Milwaukee lost to Philly last night, which I think sort of sums up the way these teams are set up,
what a great
game. Philly's got a better chance against Milwaukee matchup-wise. Milwaukee, you know, with Giannis, is going to put pressure on the rim. He's going to be getting free throws, going to be drawing fouls, going to be getting buckets inside. And the Celtics are going to be around the perimeter, bombing threes. I mean, another thing Jazula said, and it's really indicative of how he's coached this team, the single most important thing on an NBA box score right now is three-point attempts. You need to have more three-point attempts than the other team. When they are not shooting threes, he is upset. He wants them to shoot threes every trip down the court. He thinks very analytically about the game all the time. That's how he wants them to play. That's how they're built. And that Milwaukee-Boston matchup, that's what it's going to be. They're going to be bombing threes every time down, and Giannis is going to be going at them like a freight train at the rim. And that's the yang of that. But when you play like that, you're going to have games where you just stop hitting shots and you fall apart if you're not in the right frame of mind, which they weren't on Friday. So I don't think it's some kind of crisis, but I do think it's an interesting thing to watch with this team that they just are heavily, heavily reliant, like Phoenix, on making jumpers.
Well said. You just educated me. All right. Thank you, Mr. Bontemps. Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Thank you to Sarah, who's filling in for Jackson. Our
Brian booted Jackson. Producer. Booted him.
Did you say upgrade?
Got drama behind Jackson. The scenes here at the Hoop Collective. People don't know about it.
Now somebody's gonna ask me about that.
No actual drama. Well, Jackson's the best. Go back.
Will he be back on Tuesday? When we return,
how many
Tuesday?
First round picks would we have to give up to make that trade?
Well, there's some teams here today who would, you know, have a different opinion. Their first round picks flying out the door when these two teams show up. So, all right, thank you, Wilson Hoop Collective, and we'll talk to you later this week.
Adios, amigos.